May I please the court? This is a challenge by the St. Louis Association of Realtors, a trade association, seeking a declaratory judgment that an ordinance of the city of Ferguson is invalid. Very briefly, that ordinance seeks to license and regulate the business of owning rental residential property within the city and imposes significant financial and regulatory burdens on that right that impact people in our industry and people wanting to engage in the real estate business in Ferguson, and by implication, not only in Ferguson, but in any other approximately 100 municipalities in the St. Louis area. It requires that you hire a manager, that the manager be required to live within a certain distance of the property that's involved. It affects advertising rights. It in our opinion, arbitrarily classifies landlords into two groups, the responsible group and the less than responsible group, imposes requirements on them to, for example, do background checks to determine whether a prospective tenant is or should be registered as a sex offender in any one of the 50 states. It imposes, in some circumstances, regular inspections both of the exterior and the interior of the property. If a property owner has more than one property, any failure to pay a bill on his part not only revokes his license to be a landlord in Ferguson, but it terminates the occupancy permit of all of the tenants in all of his buildings, and on and on.
Now, your organization is a voluntary group of licensed professionals who sell real estate. Are they directly or indirectly impacted by this ordinance, and does that make a difference?
They're both directly and indirectly involved. One of the big issues that we have, these cases are fact-driven, and there's, from where I sit, an assumption on the part of the trial judge as to what our association does and who its membership is. It's a trade association that locally has about 9,000 members, but it's affiliated with the Missouri Association, which has many times that, and the National Association of Realtors, which is, I believe, the biggest trade association in the country. It has different classifications of members, and if I might quote from the bylaws, the principal classification, individuals who are actively engaged in the real estate profession, which is defined to include buying, selling, exchanging, renting, leasing, managing, appraising, subdividing, developing, and so forth. It's not just one limited function within the real estate world, and it specifically includes leasing and renting property. There are other classifications of membership for appraisers, for lenders, for people in public life who have an interest in real estate. We have what are called affiliate memberships, which are people who are not actively involved in the real estate profession, even in this broadest sense, but have an interest in getting information that's available through our association or the educational programs, and their interests are aligned with ours. So it's a very broad-based organization.
So you're saying that subset of membership that owns, or excuse me, that leases or rents are, in fact, you have, I guess, three members that are plaintiffs here that are actually own property. They're directly affected.
Those three and others are directly affected. Again, the evidence was not that those were the only three, much is made of that. There was no evidence that these were the only three members of the association. These were the three who testified to establish our standing in the case. And the evidence was that there were others that were known that hadn't participated, because we don't think legally we need to do that. It wouldn't be much point.
Is your standing dependent on the fact that you have three or maybe perhaps dozens of members of the organization who reside in the municipality, or are you also claiming a direct or sufficient indirect injury to the realtors because of the nature of their work? Even if you weren't a property owner, would an individual realtor who felt it affected them, would you claim they had standing too?
The test, Your Honor, is that you have to have at least one. We have three, but the requirement is at least one who would have standing in his or her own right.
So say your organization was not an organization of realtors, but a voluntary medical organization, and three of the doctors happened to own property in the city that passed the ordinance. Would you then claim that because three of your members own that property, you had standing? Or
no,
does
there
have to
be?
So it's more than just you own property. It's something to do with the nature of the organization itself.
Yes, those individuals, for example, the three who testified at trial, would have to not only own property in the city of Ferguson, but have standing in their own right, which means they'd have to have a justiciable controversy. Mm-hmm. And in this case, they're directly affected by the ordinance because they are
But the doctors would be directly affected, too, if they own property there. That wouldn't mean their doctors' association could sue. It has to be somehow within the perimeter of the interests of the overarching organization to which they're a member, too.
But remember, right? there are three parts to the representational standing issue. One is, does any individual have the standing? And in the case that you gave with the doctors, they would have. The individual doctor clearly could challenge that if he's a landlord. The question then becomes, would the medical association have the right on his behalf to do it? And I would say in that case, no.
And so what's the distinct? Because I understand basically they're saying the connection between the realtors and the happenstance that some landlords are realtors is insufficient, just as it would be in the doctor case. You think it is sufficient. So what's the distinction?
Right. The distinction is that that one of the three requirements to have representational standing is that the lawsuit has to be germane to the purposes of the organization, and that's why the medical association would have a problem here, but we don't. By germane is meant relevant or pertinent. It doesn't say that you have to have only one corporate purpose and it has to be four squares with that. Is it relevant to the purposes of the organization?
And in this case, the Eastern District examined the organization's bylaws. Does prior case law support that there has to be some, the purpose has to be expressly provided in the bylaws? Is that an element of germaneness?
No, it's much broader than that, Your Honor. The clear movement of this area, the case law over the last generation, has been to broaden the right of representational advocacy for groups. If you look at the growth of environmental claims, for example, there's no way that an environmental organization would have bylaws that would specifically cover every sort of challenge that they might want to mount. But in our case, very specifically, I went through the different kinds of membership and the interests that we have outside of brokerage. We do have objectives set forth in our bylaws, and we do have a vision statement. The vision statement very clearly states that we are advocates for private property rights, not just brokerage rights, private property rights. And of the several objectives that are in Article 2 of the bylaws, Section 4 is to further the interests of home and other real property ownership.
And is that just because your members just happen to like that, or it's because private property rights affect your jobs as realtors and the work you do as realtors?
It's both. There's no question that if you're a member of our association that's involved in brokerage, that anything that burdens the right of owning or leasing property in a municipality is going to affect your livelihood and affect the accessibility of that property and the value of that property. But again, aside from brokerage, the interests of the association extend specifically to landlords. If you look not only at the specific bylaws and purposes that are stated in our documents, but look at what the organization actually does with its resources and with its time. It's structured so that it has a tremendous interest in monitoring and trying to influence municipal legislation and, to a certain extent, state legislation. We have lobbyists. We have several full-time employees that attend municipal meetings, and we try to negotiate changes in ordinances that we think improperly impose requirements on landlords and on brokers. And in cases where we can't reach a negotiated settlement and it's important enough to the organization, we litigate. That only happens after it goes through an appropriate committee structure with representatives of all the different interests in the real estate profession, and then goes to the board of directors. And the testimony in this case was most of that litigation does not directly involve brokerage rights. Sometimes it does. We've litigated limitations on the use of for sale signs and so forth. But we've been involved in litigation that challenges ordinances that require that you register vacant lots, that challenge the city of St. Louis's efforts to impose the earnings tax on rents, which is clearly a landlord-tenant matter, that challenge the city of Jennings in its effort to make landlords register there and pay an annual fee. The majority of the litigation that we've been involved in, either bringing it directly in our own name or most of the time providing a defense to someone who's been ticketed,
I have a question.
Yes.
I just want to be clear. I know the record certainly supports your bylaws and the purpose, but in my understanding, what you're suggesting as it relates to that second prong, whether germane to the organization, the question is, does your bylaws, or is it broader than that? I know in this particular instance you have bylaws and lobbyists and the things you suggest, but is that required, is my question.
Is that
required in all instances to show that something is germane to the organization? I know the record here is clear about that, but I'm saying kind of broader.
It has to be germane to the purposes of the organization, by which my understanding of these cases is that you look at the organizing documents and what they reveal about your purposes, and you look at the activities of the organization to see what their leadership believes that its mission is, and is it germane, is it relevant to that? And for that reason, the medical association can't challenge a real estate ordinance. It has to be, it requires some connection with the ordinance. For example, you have to have people, at least one individual, who could bring the suit himself. And for that reason, we could not challenge a real estate ordinance in Seattle just because we didn't like it, because we wouldn't have that second prong of the test met, where we'd have somebody that would have individual standing.
But now, is NAACP versus Buttons, is that still good law?
As far as I know, it is, Your Honor.
And what was the standard that laid out in that case?
It has to, if I recall correctly, it has to be germane to the overall mission of the NAACP, which is the furtherance of equality and race relations and so forth. It's a very, if you look at many of these organizations, and that would be one, first of all, have multiple purposes, not just one, and have very broad-based general purposes because they're involved in so many ranges of activities. And that would be broad enough to cover a great range of activities that the NAACP might wish to be involved in, but not anything. And the question here, is it relevant? Is a municipal ordinance that imposes burdens on leasing and owning and advertising rental property in Ferguson germane to the purposes of a trade association that represents brokers, landlords, appraisers, investors, and so forth? And we think that it clearly is.
I know your time's up, but can you quickly address the opposing counsel has argued there's an inherent conflict because some of your members would support these ordinances and some of them would oppose the ordinances, and that prevents you from choosing one side or the other and representing them here.
There certainly was no evidence of that. The case that's cited, I think, is a Maryland case, is one in which there clearly would be a conflict because it was an affirmative action case in which either the affirmative action benefited this group at this group's disadvantage or vice versa, and there was a conflict. The alleged conflict here, which wasn't even brought up at the trial, was that there could be a conflict between landlords and tenants, and I submit that there is no such conflict. Tenants would have just as much of an interest in opposing this ordinance. We're not talking about housing standards here. We're talking about licensing. Just as much interest in opposing this ordinance as landlords, because if I just rented an apartment in a 20-unit building in Ferguson and the landlord failed to pay his water bill to the city, under the language of this ordinance, I could be evicted. I don't think there's any conflict. Landlords and tenants share an equal problem with this ordinance.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I would first like to point the court to a January 28th, 2011 decision, which was handed down a week after I submitted the respondent's brief in this case. And in that case, this court specifically addressed associational standing with regard to the Association of Nurse Anesthetists. And in that particular case, the association, along with a couple of doctors and nurses, were challenging a regulation prohibiting certain fluoroscopic procedures, which, prior to that regulation, the APNs had been able to do, and the doctors had relied on the APNs in order to do those procedures. This court did describe, it spent a few paragraphs describing how the doctors and the nurses are directly affected by that regulation in their performance of their jobs. They described how the doctors rely on the APNs to do these procedures. If the APNs did not do those, then the doctors would have to do them. The APNs then would not have the job responsibilities, which evidently these fluoroscopic procedures were a large portion of their job duties. So the court went to great lengths to describe the direct effect to the doctors and nurses in the course of their profession, in the course of doing their job duties. And this court specifically stated the association, and this is the Association of the Nurses Anesthetists, quote, seeks to protect its members' right to engage in their profession and participate in a collaborative practice between APNs and physicians. And I think that that goes to the heart of associational standing. I do not think that this court can make that same statement about the St. Louis Association of Realtors in this particular case.
But your opponent cites a lot of other cases that say germaneness is meant to be a low bar to the access to courts, and that our decisions have broadened the right to germaneness to be a plaintiff and have standing in these kind of suits. Can you address that tension?
Right. I don't think that with regard to the standard of the low bar, it doesn't have to be the absolute primary purpose, you know, what they do on a day-to-day basis, but it's got to have some relationship to that connective thread among the memberships. You know, I'm a member of the St. Louis Zoo Friends Association because I believe in furtherance and the betterment and the operation and maintenance of the St. Louis Zoo. That doesn't allow, you know, if I'm injured because of a regulation put on attorneys, that doesn't mean that the St. Louis Zoo Friends Association would have standing because of my injury to challenge that regulation. There's that connective thread there.
But would it affect, say, licensure requirements for curators of zoos or who are directors of zoos or other requirements that might affect people who are members of the organization that might affect how well the zoo does, maybe new rules on how you acquire animals? Or what they're saying is it's not like my example. Similarly, the medical association would have no connection, just like the lawyer would have no connection with the zoo. But they're saying realtors do have a very real connection with landlords and tenants. They buy and sell those homes, and they have an interest in those, and they have members who are landlords and who do lease, and that's among the interests set out in their bylaws, and that's among the activities that they engage in. Why isn't that very different than your example?
I think that that is way too general, and I would point the court to the White Palace case, which definitely adult businesses have an interest in furthering free speech rights because their business is premised upon the First Amendment right to free speech. If they didn't have that First Amendment, then their businesses would probably be regulated just out of business. But the court in that particular case said that they did not have standing because while they have an interest in free speech, their interest in free speech is so, or what they told the court was so general. Their specific interest in free speech is the dissemination of erotic speech. I would also point the court to the U.S. Supreme Court decision in the Anarsco case, which is cited in the brief. And in that case, a teacher's union was concerned about the use of some school property, but the court, in its opinion, stated that, yeah, of course teachers have an interest in the furtherance of education, but that is such a generalized interest, it really didn't go to, it wasn't specific enough to give them standing to challenge a regulation about the use of certain school property.
That ties in with, we have cases using language that you have to have an interest beyond that of the general public. Why don't realtors have a closer connection and a greater interest in regulations governing the leasing of property than the general public would? I mean, you say you don't, but they say they do. Is that just a fact question? Or?
Well, I think that their interest in the leasing of property doesn't go to the landlord's interest. I think that they have a general interest
Isn't that prong of the test taken care of by having the third requirement that at least one person, one member of the association, fit into that particular class, that they could bring it on their own? And that's why there's three prongs to this test. You have to have somebody who's directly interested. And really the crux of this case is that issue of germaneness. What I'm wondering is, do you agree with opposing counsel that when you're looking at germaneness, you can look at the organizational documents and also how they act as an organization?
I do agree that you look at the organizational documents, but that's not the be-all, end-all. I think what you need to do is the organizational documents are certainly going to give you a picture of how this organization operates on a day-to-day basis. I think what you need to also see is what do these real estate agents and brokers do? They talk about, now while only licensed real estate agents and brokers can be officers in the corporation, and basically they have all the power and authority, you know, within this corporation, but they also have affiliate members, appraisal of real estate, and those appraisers can gain access to the multi-list system, which is discussed throughout the organizational documents. And so you look at, you know, how appraisers play a role in the buying and selling of real estate. Of course they do. Lenders do. And so you look at that relationship among all of the members of this organization, the connective thread that binds all of them together. And of course appraisers will play a role in that. So I think you do need to look at the organizational documents. They're going to give you a pretty big picture, or a pretty good picture of how the all of the membership, why the membership joined this corporation in the first place. Why are the members there? You know, how they interact with each other. What role do they play? And
along that line, then, is the fact that they're involved in litigation and lobbying and these types of things. Why doesn't that add credence to them having standing in this case? Why hasn't the actions that they also talk about, why doesn't that add credence? I mean, if they're involved in lobbying, and if we fail in lobbying, then we bring lawsuits to try to get our position as determined by our directors, who are presumably voted on by members. Why in this case, why doesn't both the documents and the way they act support standing?
Well, as far as the lobbying, there's absolutely no evidence in the record of the lobbying. And there's nothing mentioned in the bylaws about the lobbying. I'm not sure if they're set up as a 501c3. I'm not sure about the regulations, you know, of this particular association, but there's nothing in the record that details that. With regard to the prior litigation, there's only one single case that the St. Louis Association of Realtors has brought in its own name regarding a local ordinance or a state law. And that case is the City of Jennings case. And in that case, the City of Jennings enacted an ordinance which effectively prohibited the placement of for sale signs in the yards of people.
I think what opposing counsel was arguing, though, is even if they didn't bring the others in their own name, they supported, I guess, or funded that litigation, which shows that it was an interest of the group, whether they brought it, because they're not saying they're using it to show it's germane to their interest. And isn't that shown by the fact that they have monetarily supported prior litigation on similar kinds of problems?
I don't agree. I think that you've got to look at standing when you bring something in your own name. In those cases, standing was never an issue. Whether they funded, you know, I'm sure that they fund all kinds of private interest. I am sure that, they engage in activities that wouldn't appear on the record.
In effect, you're saying, and certainly it's a viable, it's a balancing act, But that it has to be germane to their central purpose, to one of their primary purposes, to what brings them together. And that certainly could be a rule for germaneness or standing, but many cases have applied it much more broadly than that and said it doesn't have to be the primary or central purpose. It just has to be germane to one of their purposes. So what are your arguments why we should adopt your definition of germaneness versus the broader one?
I think that all of their purposes all go to the real estate business. These landlords testified that they have bought these properties as investments, that they choose or that they will be using them for retirement income, and that they personally paid the fee. The executive director of the St. Louis Association of Realtors testified that they don't manage any of these private investments on the part of their members. They don't keep track of them. They don't document them. I don't think that the private investment interest of their membership is even remotely connected to their purposes. All of their purposes have to do with the business of real estate dealing.
Well, let's look at their vision statement, because their vision statement would be a statement of their purpose. And their vision statement says that they advocate private property rights. So they have an express statement in their vision that, do you think that this lawsuit is not a case where they're advocating private property rights?
I don't. If they were advocating for private property rights, I think that they would be doing it on behalf of all property owners, and not just a very small subset. And you've got to remember the...
Is there evidence of what their subset is? What's the evidence in the record regarding the makeup? That they have evidence that they meet the requirement that members could bring the suit in their own name. But what's the evidence in the record regarding the makeup of their membership and how many might have a direct interest?
The only evidence that I can think of are the bylaws, and it describes who can be a member and who can be an officer, who can be a director. If you are an appraiser who does appraisals during a real estate transaction, then you can be an affiliate member, but you basically have no voting rights. You can't do this. It details, you know, that their members can use the multi-list system and they can use the lockbox system. So it really details who can be the members. It would exclude then everybody else.
Getting back to Judge Russell's very good point about the bar is very low, and NAACP versus Buttons, I'm sure they didn't identify. One of the things they probably didn't do is identify individuals in the state of Mississippi or wherever they're bringing the case, because they'd suffer greatly if that's why they had an organization rather than individuals, because the individuals could be suffer greatly from being identified. But the NAACP versus Buttons, I'm sure, is a very broad. NAACP is a very broad mission statement, and I think as the United States Supreme Court said, that's an organization that we need to allow to pursue their interests. How would you distinguish the two? NAACP, NAACP is a very broad organization. It's African Americans, non-African Americans. As its goal is civil liberties.
I think that you are going to find organizations that have very broad purposes. You know, you could even interpret the Humane Society as having a very broad purpose in animal welfare. But when you look at it, I don't think, while the Humane Society having a broad purpose could probably certainly challenge a regulation dealing with animals that are used for medical testing, the conditions in which they are kept. But when it came to a question of funding for a laboratory, I don't think that they could challenge that just on the basis that, well, if they increase the funding for this laboratory, then that means that more animals are going to be tested upon. So I do think that you've got to look at that. And the more broad, the lower that you set this bar, remember that standing is a jurisdictional issue. And I think that the lower this germaneness bar is set, the more you abrogate the court's role in determining this jurisdictional issue of standing. So I think that, you know, we've got to be really cautious in looking at, you know, what is this, you know, what is the connective thread that binds the membership together? What are their true interests? And here, I believe that the organizational documents and then the limited evidence that was submitted to the trial court clearly show that this is the business. This is the act of the representing sellers of homes, helping buyers of homes, prospective buyers, to find houses in the area that they want, the appraisal process, the lending process. It all has to do with the business. And this whole idea that we're going to advocate for private property rights.
What about the idea that these regulations make it harder for us to sell properties? Why doesn't that?
There's absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever.
Is that because it was dismissed before it got to trial?
No, actually, we had a full-blown evidentiary hearing on this issue, and the association was able to present its evidence, and they absolutely presented absolutely no evidence on that.
Well, what about if they feared that? I mean, clearly that has to be one of their interests. Is that sufficient, or you have to prove the effect first, or do you have to prove that you reasonably are concerned it may, because there's certain prerequisites to sale that now exist that didn't previously. Is that right?
I would suggest that actually that this type of regulation maintains the housing stock. So of course it's going to create better houses that are
so
probably
they may have
going
an interest in favor of it, but one way or the other it may affect their business.
I don't think so. I don't agree with that, because actually I think that you're going to have the better housing stock out there, and I don't think that it affects the buying and the selling of the real estate. I think it affects the real estate transactions. You have a couple of the members who have chosen to make particular
investments.
That's
debatable. That would be debatable. That I understand that. You would have a position, but wouldn't the association have an interest in that? Now, that could be debatable. I understand that.
Well, might even be interest? The kind of thing that they debate amongst themselves and end up 60-40 or 55-45 or whatever. But I'm trying to see how it seems odd to me that you would take the position that it just that these regulations just have no effect on the market.
There's just absolutely no evidence that they would. And they probably did have that internal debate, and I'm sure that there were differences of opinion.
Any more questions? Thank you very much. Hey, you mentioned environmental law and standing in environmental. There are limits. Justice William O. Douglas in the Sierra Club case said trees had standing. I don't think that was upheld by the rest of the majority of the Supreme Court of the United States, but there are limits to how much standing, even though trees are standing up, Justice Douglas' position did not prevail. Even though
we agree. There are books on that subject, but the trees. What? There's a book by that title, Do Trees Have Standing? We agree there are limits, but it's certainly a broadening area, because there's a decision against our association in this case, for example, would undermine a great deal of what the work of the association is, because so many of the concerns that we have involve relatively small claimants or people who are affected financially in a small enough way that they don't have the resources to fight them themselves. And we can bring them on their behalf, and they have a domino effect in other municipalities. People don't want to fight City Hall by themselves and so forth. This is an important part of the mission of the association. One of my frustrations in this case is that we're constantly talking about these assumptions about what the association does and who it makes up that simply aren't supported by the record. Ms. Carr just said that to be an officer director, you have to be involved in the sale of real estate. That is not correct. We have two past presidents that come to mind of our association. One was a lawyer who was involved in investment real estate, and the other one was a past president of a savings and loan association. These were presidents of our association. The association is far more than just a brokerage institution, and it specifically represents the interests of landlords, investors, developers, and so forth. And we believe that this is germane, and it complies with those three prongs.
Can you address, we asked some questions of opposing counsel about the interests of realtors and brokers in general in the sale of houses and the stock of houses and making it easier or harder to sell homes. And she indicated that there was a hearing below and you were unable to present evidence that this regulation would actually affect the buying or selling of houses.
There was no evidence one way or the other on that. Our feeling about that is that we deal with these things as an association all the time and make a determination as to, based on our experience, what can have a burdensome effect on the leasing and sale of property and what doesn't. But there was no evidence of that at the trial. In fact, almost all the evidence at the trial, other than introducing the ordinance and citing what the Fourth and Fourteenth Amendment objections to it were and so forth, had to do with the standing issue. But the case was fully tried, and that issue didn't come up. I believe that we have a right to make a judgment that we believe that it is burdensome and oppose it, not specifically on that ground, but on the ground that it involves unlawful search
and seizure. Wouldn't that be somewhat probative if you're trying to say the City of Ferguson is over-regulating your industry to provide evidence to the judge, if you have standing, to provide evidence to the judge that this will cost you money and the people and the members of your association to comply with the regulation, then the judge can make a determination.
Yes,
isn't that the crux of what you're saying?
It's not just the crux, Your Honor. There are. I just touched in my opening sentences on the many aspects of this ordinance that we find burdensome and that impact the rights of people involved in real estate, and we focused on a number of those and briefed a number of those, not every one of them. But yes,
you showed an impact in other ways, but and didn't present evidence pro or con on that particular issue?
Not on that particular issue, but we clearly showed that it impacts the right of landlords and the right of rights of tenants.
What's the remedy in this case? The standing issue was heard by the court during a bench trial, and the court ruled on standing rather than merits. Is it remanded for the court to rule on the merits? Is that the remedy?
Yes, we're seeking a declaratory judgment. She heard all the evidence. She heard the trial, and I believe if we prevail here, it would be remanded for her to make a decision on the merits. There was a motion opposing counsel filed a motion to dismiss for lack of standing that was taken with the case. Then the entire case was tried. It was under submission for over a year, and then she granted the motion. But the case has been tried, and we believe it's in a position where she could decide it on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you.